This is Central Time. A lot of things can change in a place fairly quickly. Old businesses close, new ones open, restaurants change, new buildings go up. But in the middle of all that change, if you look hard enough, you might be able to find some things that are remnants of the past, maybe in unexpected places. A new book from a Milwaukeean features images of faded, hand-painted murals advertising anything from beer to ice cream and even some neon mid-century signs, relics of history hidden in plain sight. Adam Levin is a Milwaukee history buff, an amateur photographer, and a ghost sign hunter. He's the administrator of the Old Milwaukee group on Facebook, where he and other group members share photos and tidbits from the past, preserving memories through those photographs and appreciating the history of Milwaukee. His new book is called Fading Signs of Milwaukee. He joins us now in our Milwaukee studio. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What got you, Adam, interested in these ghost signs?
I've been taking photos of ghost signs for about 5-6 years, and I started seeing a lot of them and thought, you know, it'd be a great way to document all these signs by taking photos. And little did I know, 5 years, 6 years later, I'd get a book deal. So I never thought that would occur. So I'm very fascinated with history, and I'm fascinated at what's left of history. And these fading ghost signs, they fascinate me.
And Adam, they fascinate me too, but I always love when I see one of these, but I don't know if I could put into words why. Maybe you can. What is it about these, you know, that faded bread advertisement on the wall or whatever that is just so cool to find?
Yeah, they're faded, even a little doomed, and they're still visible. It's just like a reminder of a different time, and they're still around, and you see them for ads that you wouldn't see anymore, so... You know, it may not fascinate everyone, but it certainly fascinates me.
And you share, through the book, you share, of course, a lot of pictures, but you also share some of the stories, as much as we can know the stories behind these signs. Right. What kind of windows do they give us into Milwaukee's past?
Beer, food, go figure. let me think what else we have. Gasoline, restaurants. That's about a good example of some.
Yeah, but you also look at, you know, you mentioned the gas stations, and you were able to figure out at least some of the history behind one of the fading gas stations that, you know, they'd rebranded the owner, and all of a sudden that was it was an obsolete brand and a sign, and it made you wonder, you know, what was it like? You're the gas station owner, and now kind of the rug's been pulled out from under you.
Right. The Comedy Cafe was going through a demolition back in late 2017, and this ghost sign from 50, 60-something years ago was unearthed, and nobody even knew it was there. And it resurfaced, and I got out there and took photos, and I pleaded with the new business to save it, but unfortunately they couldn't. So it was visible for about a month until it was unfortunately demolished. I told them, don't let me know when it's demolished. I'll get upset.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, it was – that's one of my favorite signs out of the book because nobody knew it was there. Not even John Goethe knew it was there.
Milwaukee historian John Goethe. Yeah. He knows everything.
I talked to him about this because I couldn't find any information. I was looking everywhere and – he's like, sorry, Adam, even I don't even know anything about it.
So. We're talking Adam Levin. His new book is called Fading Ads of Milwaukee. I think I said Fading Signs earlier. It is Fading Ads of Milwaukee. Yeah. How do you go about hunting for these, Adam? Do you just wander around town, or do you have a network of informants now who alert you?
You get a vibe after doing it a while. Just kind of you look at buildings in a certain way. A lot of people take these signs for granted. When people ask me about this book, they say, what's a ghost sign? I said, I know that you've seen it, so let me show you an example, and I'll pull up a photo off my phone. And they're like, oh, yeah, sure, I know those. But not a lot of people, you know, really look at them and appreciate them like I do, or maybe a handful of people I know do. So, you know, there's certain areas of town that you'll know. You'll see them, and sometimes new ones will pop up when a building is demolished, and you'll see one that has been unearthed for the first time in over 75 years. And that just happened last summer. There was a ghost sign on MLK that resurfaced, and the building next to it was demolished. And it's like a sign for suspenders. I mean, this is just fascinating to me. So I got out there and took a couple photos, and I shared it online. And, you know, it's just a great – it's just a piece of art, you know, to me, you know. So,
and I see sometimes you can see signs that people actually have intentionally restored. Do you like to see that, or are you a fan of finding them in all their faded glory?
Exactly, faded glory. When you start touching it up, that's when you don't know if it's old. You don't know if it's originally from 1920 or if it's from 2020, you know. So I'd rather, I mean, it's not my say, but, you know, if I had a choice, just let the sign do its thing, you know.
We're talking to Adam Levin, Milwaukee history buff, amateur photographer, and ghost sign hunter. His new book is called Fading Ads of Milwaukee. He'll be at Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee this Friday, February 21st at 7 p.m. talking about the book. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Wherever you are, do you see sometimes these, what he's calling ghost signs, those old ads for maybe that thing that used to be in the building but hasn't been there for 50 years or more? Do you have some of these in your part of the state, maybe a favorite one? Are you part of the Old Milwaukee Facebook group? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time. We're talking with Adam Levin, Milwaukee history buff, amateur photographer, and a hunter of ghost signs, those old signs that might be painted, say, on the side of a building, an advertisement for a business that isn't there anymore. His new book is called Fading Ads of Milwaukee. He'll be speaking at Boswell Book Company this Friday, February 21st. That's in Milwaukee at 7 p.m. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you look for these old faded signs? Do you have a favorite one in your own community, Milwaukee, or anywhere in the state or beyond? Call in at 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Michael is with us in Madison. Michael, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
I can attest to the popularity of these and how it's increasing. I'm a scenic artist, and I'm having more and more clients, local, like corporate places and things like that, that are having people like me come in and make ghost signs for them to make them look like ghost signs. And it's beautiful. I mean, we do a lot of research when we go to create one and go through lots of photographs of old signs, and it's a great look when it's finished. But it's becoming quite popular to have people call me to say, we want a ghost sign in our office or
no kidding.
Whatever they need.
Yeah. Michael, thank you for sharing that. Adam, I know that's not exactly the sort of thing you're looking for, but it sounds like there's a hunger to see these things, though. Do you see people more willing to, in some cases, preserve the actual ghost signs on their buildings because of this newfound love of them?
Actually, last summer, Anodyne Coffee in Walker's Point, they made a sign that maybe in 100 years will be a ghost sign. So it looks really great. And I'm starting to see it, not as many, but there's some out there that people are creating to give that vibe, which I like.
Thanks for the call, Michael. Interesting line of work. We'll go to Mike now in Milwaukee. Mike, hello.
Hello. Yeah, I used to notice, drive around Milwaukee a lot and notice some of the old beer hand-painted signs on old taverns. And I just recently noticed, I was thinking about photographing them, and I never got around to it. But anyway, there was, I don't know if Adam ever noticed, on First and Keith, there's a very old tavern building with a Gettleman hand-painted sign that's still visible.
In the book.
Yep,
that's
you've got Gettleman in the book, yeah.
I got that exact one. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's very colorful. It's a great sign.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. I mean, you could almost do a whole book of just beer ghost ads in
this city. Yeah.
Yeah. What are some of the other favorite old brands that you've seen when it comes to the beer, the faded beer signs around Milwaukee?
Blatz. There is a Blatz ghost sign behind Oakland Euros on Oakland and Locust, and I didn't realize it was there until a couple summers ago, and it's not easy to see. So I talked to the owner. I had a Euro first, and then I talked to the owner, and I said, "Hey, is there any way I can get a photo of this sign?" I told him why, and because of the book, and he said, "Sure." So he lives upstairs, so he took me upstairs through his patio, and I was able to get a shot. So, you know, if you ask nicely, sometimes you get into places that most people don't. So if you just are up front and say, look, here's what I'm doing, and it's kind of most people will understand and be happy to help you out.
Yeah, that's something I love about the book. Some of the ones you take pictures of are outside, and anybody can see them walking by. Yeah. Sometimes it's, you know, it's in the back room of the store, in the interior. Mm-hmm. How do you discover those, first of all? Because you can't just walk around and see them.
Well, most of the photos I found on my own, but sometimes I'll have a friend send me a message on Facebook or something and going, hey, do you know about this sign there or this? I'm like, oh, I'll check into it. But I'm not reaching out to people. They're just coming to me because they know of my fascination for it. And there's a liquor store on Oakland Avenue. I'm going blank right now on that one, sorry. But there's an old sign in their storage area before it became Otto's. So it's not one that most of the customers can see. And I asked when I went in there, I mentioned, I hear you have a ghost sign. And they looked at me a little strange. And then I explained who I was and what I was interested in. And they're like, sure, if you want to take a look. And it's like almost covered in boxes in the back. But it was a time when the parking lot was open and then they enclosed it. So
as we wrap up, Adam, I understand your love of these faded signs of Milwaukee is kind of just a symptom of your love of the city. You love seeing the place, being there and looking back at the way things were. What got you hooked on Milwaukee?
Well, I'm from here. So, you know, I'm always fascinated how things used to be. You know, why are things the way they are now? Why have they changed? Just a curiosity. I think this all stems from curiosity. If you have that, you have the passion to find things like this. And in my free time, you know, I look for history. I live in the now, but I chase history. you know, it's not living in the past. It's an appreciation for it.
Adam, thanks for joining us and happy hunting.
Thank you.
That's Adam Levin, a Milwaukee history buff, amateur photographer, and a hunter of these ghost signs we've been talking about, these old, often faded advertising signs around the city. He's administrator of the Facebook group Old Milwaukee. We've been talking about his new book, Fading Ads of Milwaukee. See and hear more from Adam at the Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee this Friday at 7. Coming up after the news, Children's Theater of Madison is putting on a production about a young artist on the autism spectrum played by a young actor on the spectrum. We'll learn about making arts accessible. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A lot of Wisconsin cultural institutions, museums, libraries, and more are working to make themselves more accessible to people from a number of different backgrounds. A new production at Children's Theater in Madison is doing that on and off stage. Mockingbird is a play about 11-year-old Caitlin, an artist on the autism spectrum. The actor who will play Caitlin in most performances is also on the autism spectrum, a conscious casting decision. And the theater group is working to make the performances accessible to audience members on the autism spectrum as well. Two members of Children's Theater of Madison join us to talk about Mockingbird and the theater's efforts in diversity and accessibility. Erica Berman is Director of Education and Artistic Associate with the Children's Theater of Madison. She introduced sensory-friendly programming to the theater and collaborated on the Access for All initiative. And Megwin Sanders-Andrews is the Access for All Coordinator at the Children's Theater of Madison. For nearly 20 years, she's worked to engage diverse communities in the arts. Megwin, thanks for joining us on Central Time.
Oh, thank you for having us.
And Erica, thanks for coming up to the studio.
Thank you.
Megwin, can you give us a little bit of the story of Mockingbird? It's an adaptation of a book.
Absolutely. So Mockingbird is the story of Caitlin, Caitlin is on the autism spectrum, and her big brother, Devin, was her best friend and the one who helped her negotiate the world. Devin is killed in a school shooting, and the play opens at his funeral. So it's a story of Caitlin learning to negotiate the world without Devin, and it's a story of strength and healing and resiliency as the community comes together after this tragic event.
And there's some heavy issues here. Erica, why did Children's Theater of Madison want to tackle this production?
We feel like it's an extremely timely play, not only with the subject of school shooting, but also in terms of autism, both in our community, but also in the world at large. I feel like there's a lot more understanding about autism nowadays. A lot of students and youth we work with are on the autism spectrum, or at least have relationships with people who are on the autism spectrum. So this play really encompasses a lot of different aspects of a community and also shows the best of people, people learning to be empathetic, people learning how to grieve, things that we all can connect to. And I think that connectivity is something that's really important to CTM and all the work we do. Also, right now in CTM's history, it's a really perfect time to do Mockingbird because of all the accessibility work we've been doing, both in our classes, with our internship program, and then with this play, casting a young actor on the autism spectrum. So it's just a really good time, I feel like, for Madison, but also for CTM.
Megwin, let's talk about the actor who ends up playing Caitlin. You had sought out an actor on the autism spectrum. Can you talk about the process for finding the right person for, I've read the script, a demanding role?
It is a demanding role. I'd like to start by saying that people with disabilities are really underrepresented in theater, in media, in movies, in television. It's really important to CTM that that everyone in the community, every young person, can see themselves on our stage, mm-hmm. and that every young person who wants to be a part of our program, our programming or our productions, has that opportunity. So we feel so lucky to have found Maddie to take on the role of Caitlin. She is so engaging on stage. We have made some accommodations. There were accommodations for the audition process. We actually auditioned Maddie at Achieving Collaborative Treatment. We offered spaces that might be more comfortable for actors to audition. We've also had accommodations such as a break space in the classroom. In the studio. An adapted schedule. We've had fidgets available. She's had a support person. We also have a cover for the role of Caitlin. So Amelie LaBar is also playing Caitlin. Amelie has been in a few shows. She has experience in the theater, and she has a great actor's toolbox. So she and Maddie sort of have been bringing their strengths together to create the role together. So I want to say that 11 performances will be played by Maddie and 3 by Amelie.
Hmm. Well, there's a striking scene at the beginning of the play where Caitlin is being overwhelmed, right, at the funeral, and all the people expressing their grief to her awkwardly. And the actor really has to experience that. Has that been a challenge? And how do you work around that, Erica?
What's really interesting is that I don't think it was a challenge for a young actor on the autism spectrum, because it's an overwhelming experience for anyone to be present at a funeral, first of all, of someone that you love. That's a really difficult thing, no matter whether you're neurotypical or on the autism spectrum. And then in addition to that, with autism, there's a lot of sensory overwhelm. So not just the emotional side of it, but just all of the senses, a lot of people in your space, a lot of new things, a lot of things that haven't been previewed before, a lot of unpredictability, and all of those can also be challenging. But working within that scene, I think that Maddie brought an authenticity to it in terms of who she is, but also how anyone would act in that type of environment. So I think when you open this scene, you really get a sense of not only her grief, but her being inconvenienced, her being uncomfortable. We've really didn't have to look too far to make that scene come to life.
And Erica, the character, actually for both of you, the character of Caitlin is an artist. And I understand you reflect that some in the work, but also in the playhouse itself with the exhibition. Can you talk about what went into that? Let's start with Erica.
Sure. So I had this vision that as people came in to see our show, wouldn't it be wonderful if they experienced art by artists with disabilities in the Playhouse Gallery and then walked into the theater to see a play about a young person with a disability? And I mean, with through the help of Megwin and five different organizations, CTM, Overture Center, CI Pediatric Therapies, ACT, and most importantly, in a way, Art Working, all came together collectively to make this exhibit happen. We're really proud of the exhibit and thrilled that these professional, gorgeous pieces of art greet all of our audience members and any other guests to Overture Center.
We also have artwork by an artist with a disability named Seth Albertson as part of the set and as part of the props. So there are drawings of Caitlin's on stage. Those are done by Seth. And there is artwork that's part of the proscenium arch that is also done by Seth.
We're talking to Megwin Sanders-Andrews and Erica Berman with Children's Theater of Madison, looking at a production of the play Mockingbird. Now, this isn't just happening on stage. You mentioned at one point making the performances accessible to people in the audience. What kind of things, Megwin, do we see?
We will have resources available at our show, like we do actually at every show. We'll have sensory kits available. We'll also have representatives from CI and ACT, so that if there's anyone on the spectrum who could benefit from support, they'll have that available to them.
I've seen movie theaters and other playhouses around the country. We've talked about this some on the show, are doing either including things at all performances or having special theatrical releases for people on the spectrum. Are you finding that inspiring as you see a lot of the arts and theater community taking this up?
Yes. Well, actually, CTM has been at the forefront of that work for many seasons now at our company. We've been offering sensory-friendly performances since 2014. We offer one to two a year. We actually have one for Beat Bugs coming up, so please check our website for that. And we feel that it's so important for all youth to be able to engage with our work at whatever level feels comfortable for them. So for some parents of youth with disabilities, they find a sensory-friendly performance really empowering and positive because it's a really welcoming space that's been tailor-made to suit the needs of their children. For other parents, they want their students to see the regularly scheduled performances and be able to integrate with those audiences. And for us, we say, excellent. And we offer, as Megwin mentioned, those sensory kits. So CTM has been part of the sensory-friendly programming in this city for some time. So I think it's just wonderful that that it's not only CTM. I know Madison Ballet recently did one. So just that it's catching on in our community and that we're making more experiences, theater, movies, art, etc., available for all of our kids.
Megwin, you've both mentioned those sensory kits. For people who haven't experienced this, what actually, we open it up, what's in it?
Fidgets, headphones, sunglasses, a variety of items. We also, at our sensory-friendly performances, we offer snacks. We put the house lights at half for someone who might find that difficult. And it's just a much more relaxed experience.
We also train all of our actors as to what to expect with a sensory-friendly audience. We always say that if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. Every audience is different, whether it's a sensory-friendly audience or not, but to understand the mission of what we're trying to accomplish with these performances. So our actors are trained as well.
You know, I kind of like this, even as somebody who might not need the sensory kits, sometimes for anybody that to sit quietly and still in your seat and watch the performance being performed for you, it sounds like it might be a nice break for everybody.
Absolutely. Megwin has this wonderful phrase that I love, which is essential for some but beneficial for all. So for me, I don't have autism, but I do have sensory processing disorder. So sometimes sound and light can be really oppressive for me. And so slight adjustments can really help out. So no matter where you are on that spectrum, CTM has a place for you at our all of our programming and our performances.
And Erica, there's a question and answer talkback session after each performance. I know sometimes it's just that premiere performance where you have that talkback. Why was it important to do a talkback each night?
It was really vital for us to do a talkback each night. Well, I should say we always do that for this show with CTM. Mm-hmm. Our wonderful artistic director, Roseanne Sheridan, feels it's very important to do a show for young adults each season. And it really tackles themes that young adults might be facing. These are mainly middle school, high school age, but certainly adults can come and really gain something from these performances as well. And so this is a tradition kind of going back further. So we always have talkbacks to give the audience a chance to process with the actors, to ask questions of the actors about their process, both to the themes of the show, but also to what it was like to build the show and put together the show. For this one in particular, we have special guests at every single performance, which is really exciting. And these special guests have some type of connection to either the world of Mockingbird or connection with CTM and this inclusivity work that we're doing.
Megwin, as I mentioned, when I read the script, this is heavy. And I'll admit, I thought like, the kids are performing in this and watching this. Is this too much? And I think the answer is, I'm underestimating kids. Spell that out for me.
There's a quote about writing children's books that you take the most complicated thing that you can think of, and that's going to be your appropriate topic. I feel like this, as Erica says, this is a really timely topic. Today, I conducted some pre-show workshops at a middle school, and it's present for them. We did tableaus that included children hiding under desks. It included police officers taking people away. It also included images of community, images of the strength of friends and teachers. So again, this is sort of really present for them. I'll also say that Maddie, our actor with autism, one of the things that she has said to us is that she hasn't always felt visible. And this play is an opportunity for her to stand center stage and be visible, not just her, but be visible as a person on the spectrum. So again, we're bringing all of that to the stage and, as Erica said, offering a chance to sort of really talk about some of it afterwards.
Erica, can you wrap us up with a look at the mission you're trying to perform at the Children's Theater of Madison with Mockingbird and the rest of your schedule?
Absolutely. So the mission of CTM is to create vibrant theater experiences that educate, engage, and inspire young people in their communities. And when Megwin and I specifically think about this work, we always think about which young people and what communities. And so for us, Mockingbird really beautifully illustrates the mission and goals of CTM and where we are today. I think that audiences of all ages will connect with this show. There are definitely dark themes. I will say there is no portrayal of gun violence
right
in the show whatsoever. I think that's really important to note. And I feel like audiences will really connect with Caitlin's journey. There's a quote about walking in another person's shoes, and I think that's exactly what the audience will do. They'll take a walk in Caitlin's shoes, and I think they might be surprised at how similar some of their experiences are to Caitlin's, as well as how different it can be as well. And so I think it's just a really timely, beautiful story. And there's a little bit of humor, too, because there's no way you could possibly put on a drama without humor or a comedy without a little bit of darkness. So
I do want to say one more thing about representation of autism. As Erica mentioned, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. CTM isn't seeking to represent autism or represent every person with autism. We're creating one character who happens to have autism. And in our process, we're very much treating her autism as a creative asset that's informing the role and the character that both she and Amelie are building. We very much hope to see you there. Tickets are available at ctmtheater.org.
Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Megwin Sanders-Andrews is the Access for All coordinator at the Children's Theater of Madison. Erica Berman is Director of Education and Artistic Associate with the Children's Theater of Madison. Mockingbird starts this weekend and ends on March 1st. You can find out more at ctmtheater.org.